Hey, welcome to this week's Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. I'm your host, Kevin Riles, and Kevin Riles and friends. This week, I am so excited to have Craig Cassell on our Investor April. He is the actual person that got me into real estate, literally sold me my first house, helped me get my license, and so I'm just so proud and honored to have him. We're going to talk about real estate investing from an auction perspective. Craig is 25-plus year real estate investor, owns a lot of property, and so I wanted to have him on to kind of show what a seasoned investor looked like and what you can grow to. So, DJ, hit that music, please.
Support for this program comes from the Digital Broadcasting Network, presenting podcasts and web series from everyday people who have an extraordinary passion to make the world a better place.
Welcome back to the Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. This is your host, Kevin Riles. And remember, the original name is Kevin Riles and Friends. And today, I have someone that I have known, and I don't know if he knows this, but this month, I actually have my settlement statement on my desk at home. I bought my first house, which was a duplex. And the person that helped me buy my first house, the person that got me into real estate, the person that got me into real estate investing, the person that made me get my license is sitting next to me. Mr. Craig Cassell is in the building today. Welcome to the Real Estate of Life, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
And before he starts talking, since it's my podcast, I'm going to talk. So I've been knowing Craig for 20 years this month.
Wow.
Actually, maybe a little bit longer than this month. But we closed on that Wheeler property 20 years ago, April, wow, in 1998. In 1998, you sold me a duplex. So let me give you a little bit of history. So I was working at Exxon at the time, oil and gas company, and I was telling a friend of both of ours, Arnita Gates, shout out to Ms. Gates, retired now, and I told her I was looking for a house and looking for a single family house. She said, well, I got a friend. Y'all are similar. Y'all both engineer majors, and he has his a license, and he can help you. And I said, okay. And so she introduced me to Craig Cassell. So I told Craig I wanted to buy a single family house. And he said, well, why you buying a single family house when you can buy you a duplex? And I was like, well, I don't know. He said, yeah, you live in one side and you rent out the other. And I said, huh, really? So anyway, long story short, fast forward, we found a duplex on the corner of Wheeler and Delano in Third Ward. And I bought that duplex. He guided me through the purchase process. Bought it for $87,000. I just looked at that the other day. Now, I still wish I had it. I lived in one side, and I had a renter, and she basically paid, I'm going to say, about 80% of my note. And so I was like, huh, Craig is an engineer by day, real estate agent by night. I'm going to go get my real estate license. So I went and got my real estate license, not knowing that that literally would be career changing and that I would actually start practicing real estate. So let me publicly say, first and foremost, thank you, because you actually changed my life.
Thank you, Kevin.
I don't know if I haven't said that, I want to say it publicly. And secondly, the book that I wrote, 40 Acres in a 40 Acres and a Mule, the African-American Guide to Building Wealth, I tell this story in the in the first chapter of that book. So, okay, now he can talk. welcome again. I wanted to have you on, and I want to give people, we've had different investors on this month, and I have had some guys that are in the beginning stage, not saying that you're at the end stage, but you've been in the game for longer than you've known me. And so I just want, before we talk about your real estate investing, I want to kind of give people a sense of who you are, kind of your background and how you got started. So tell them, you know, kind of when you first came out of college, what you were doing and kind of that story leading into real estate investing.
Okay. I graduated from University of Texas Chemical Engineering in 1987. When I got out, I got married in 1990 to my lovely wife, Denise.
Shout out to Denise.
Shout out. And we had pretty good jobs, making good money. And at the end of the year, we paid the IRS a pretty good tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a friend of mine said, hey, you know, you guys probably need to start doing some investing in properties to reduce your taxable income. So I said, reduce my taxable income? He said, yeah. So we started investing in properties, and it helped reduce our taxable income. Thus, we had more money in our pockets at the end of the day. And that's how we got started with single-family homes.
So in that first, say, year or two, did you buy one property or two properties? I remember you telling me that you guys kept y'all's overhead low. I want to hear people to hear that hear that story, because look, success, anybody can have success, but you got to be willing to pay the price and do things that maybe other people don't think normal. So I want people to kind of know y'all's story as to how you got started.
Well, my one thing my father told me before me and my wife got married, he said, son, you know, I know most people live off of two people's salary, live off both salaries. He said, you should probably live off of one. Okay, thus, if she decides not to go back to work after y'all have children, it's not an issue. So just live off of one salary and you'll be fine. So that's what we did. We lived very modest, and we enjoyed our life and saved a lot of money. First thing we did, we paid off our student loans right off the bat. Within the first 6 months after marriage, the student loans were gone. And then from there, we just started saving money. You know, I remember telling one of my friends, I said, you know, one of my goals was to save $100,000 within 10 years. And to me, that was a lot of money. Well, I had that saved in about 2 years. It was good.
It was good. So your first investment property. Tell me about that first deal.
First investment property I had was a house in Missouri City.
Okay.
I bought it. It was one of those ones where you just assume, you just assume the loan.
So let me pause. For those young folks out there, there used to be a time where you could do what they call non-qualified assumable loans, which are loans or qualified assumable, where you could take over the note, just walk in on the note with very minimal out-of-pocket and not having to get a new loan. So go ahead. Right. I'm sorry.
So I had that property. I fixed it up, rented it out. At the time, I lived in Friendswood. So it was very good to me while it was occupied. But then when it became vacant, then I'm paying the note every month. And I said, I don't like that much. But then I had that one. Then I had another house in Katy that I was doing the same thing. I acquired it. I think it was a non-assumable loan. So I had two non-assumable loans I had. One was in Katy. One was in Missouri City. And me and my wife, we lived in Friendswood. So I had a guy that I worked with as an engineer during the day. He said, Cassell, you know, your properties are too far apart. You need to have all your properties real close to you. That way you can get to them at one time. So I ended up selling those off. And then when I relocated to Third Ward, I started buying everything in close proximity of me. I mean, I can get to everything in about 10 minutes.
So rule number one from the Craig Cassell Investment Diaries that he taught me, and this is like going down memory lane, was Kevin, everything you need is, he told me the same thing, needs to be within a 20-minute drive of you. And that's almost too much. Right. I remember you, you saying that. And so y'all remember that I did a podcast on my worst real estate mistake. My worst real estate mistake happened in Galveston. And I broke Craig's number one rule is I could not manage that property properly because it was 50 minutes or 45 minutes away from me. So I broke, you know, the my mentor told me what to do at the very beginning. Keep everything close. Wherever you choose, you keep everything close. I broke that rule. Bought wit is better than taught wit. When you pay to learn a lesson, you learn it way better than him telling me. Right. So now I believe the same thing. Right. Not just because he told me, because I got my hand slapped really bad, like, well, almost chopped off. So rule number one, I'm gonna do some bullet points throughout this podcast is, when you start, I'll say this, when you start, everything should be within close to you.
And
you believe that.
Right, and I do. And one thing about having it close to you, that when something pops up, you already know the area. You don't have to do a whole lot of research because you've been living it. You know what it's worth. And how much, you know, what's a good deal when you buy it? So when you see a deal come up, you don't have to go back and pull out a spreadsheet and spend 3 or 4 weeks on it trying to figure out whether it's a good deal or not. You know, you'll know it then. And, you know, they say the early bird catches the worm. Well, in the real estate too, when there's a good deal, the early bird catches that worm, and then you got a good deal.
Right, Right.
So you got to be on it.
And so, Craig, for those of you that are not in the Houston area, our area, just like most cities that I'm familiar with, Atlanta, Chicago, Washington, D.C., is going through gentrification of the inner urban areas. And so Craig mentions Third Ward. So for those of you that are not familiar with Houston, that is a historic area that's close to downtown, close to the two universities, Texas Southern University and U of H. And he has been over there for 20 plus years. And so if a piece of dirt comes up in Third Ward, he doesn't have to call someone like myself to get comps or anything like that. He knows that he has a PhD in Third Ward.
That's right.
PhD in Third Ward, PhD in state issues and everything else. So you got those first two. You learned that lesson from your guy saying, hey, your stuff is too far apart. Take me from the time that you settled in Third Ward. What did you start doing then?
Well, you know, I think another lesson I learned from those single families that when they were vacant, then I had to come out of my pocket and pay. And I said, I don't like coming out of my pocket and paying. I like for other people to pay for my stuff.
Right.
So my next move was to go and buy multifamily.
Okay.
So I purchased one multifamily at six units for like $100,000. It was already rented out for like $300 a month each unit. So, you know, I was making $1,000 a month right off of that. And if half of it was occupied, I was still really good. So I did that, and then I bought a couple of more multifamilies. And then when I met Kevin, I was real versed on multifamily. I said, hey, man, you know, you got better things to do with your money. Let somebody else pay for the stuff that you live in.
I've since helped. I've paid it forward. I've helped some guys that are starting off do the same thing, buy a duplex, buy a fourplex. A young sister that I about 3 years ago, who's an engineer, MBA from Wharton, making really good money, convinced her to go to Third Ward, bought a, and you'll understand this, what I'm saying, she bought a four unit on Truxillo, which, you know, back in the day, I wouldn't have a single female living on Truxillo, but things have changed a little bit, but, and that has performed well. She lived in the top duplex unit, and didn't pay a note, because it was all paid for. And so I remember the, was it 12 units on Benz?
On Benz, yes.
Yeah, and things of that that nature. And so, and that's in the Museum District. So you started the multifamily. I've known you for a long time. I know that you scaled to a significant amount of properties. I'm going to say over 70 properties or so.
Right.
And so how did you scale? What, you know, what's that process?
Well, what happened then is that in 2001, I took a package from my company.
Okay.
And I had a group of friends, and we all started investing together, buying properties.
Okay.
And we went to the auction and started buying properties at the auction. Now, one thing about the auction that was different than my initial investments, that initial investments I had financing. So I just had good credit, you know, had a couple of nickels in the bank. I go down there, hey, I want to buy this. Oh, no problem, Mr. Cassell, sign here. Well, at the auction, they don't play that.
No,
what they
not in
want
Texas,
is
no.
cash.
Right.
So in order to be competitive, in order to be able to buy things at the auction, I had to go in and had to liquidate some of my multifamilies that I really liked. But it worked out really well because I was able to buy a lot of properties at a really good price. And I kind of kept them, you know, in an area in Third Ward, or my other area was in South Park area, where I have a lot of rentals in South Park. You can get them real inexpensive, and they rent really well. I mean, the rent has probably went up 50% in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's the rental market. I tell people the single family, it's harder to find a rental than it is to find a single family house to buy right now.
Right.
I mean, especially in certain areas. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, other than your experience, is to kind of briefly talk about that auction process, because I get calls to my office all the time. And people want to go to the auction and first Tuesday of the month at every county courthouse in the state of Texas. And I get calls from, you know, I teach at Prairie View A&M University, so people want to go to the Waller auction or the Fort Bend auction or the Harris County auction or whatever the case may be. They've read a book or saw a Carlton Sheets overnight, you know, whatever the case may be. And I always tell them, because I got this from you, go to the auction about three or four times before you – you know, before you come in there with your checks or your money, I should say. And I want to tell people from the source, why do you feel that way as far as, you know, make sure you go witness the process before you jump in?
Well, one is because once you buy it, it's yours. And no give backs. You can't say, hey, I don't want this. No, once you spend your money, it's yours. And I try to tell first investors, the first thing to do is don't go to the auction.
I agree.
Go to find something off the MLS, get your realtor.
Get your HUD house or something like that.
Right. Yeah. And then you'll be better off because the bank ain't going to lend you the money. They won't lend you the money unless it's a good deal.
Right.
Right. They won't, you they won't
check.
Let you.
That's your check sum.
That's right, your check. Right. So by going to the auction, there's no bank. You know, whatever decision you make is your decision. You got to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I will go there three or four or five times before you think about purchasing anything.
Right.
Number one. And number two, if you're going to be successful at the auction, you need to be a part of a team. You can't go there by yourself and try to buy something.
I can't be Ranger Rick go up in there and just.
No. It is too difficult right now, especially the way the market is right now, is that real estate is everything. So everybody and their mom, their grandmom, they come up there trying to buy something at the auction. And it's very difficult for someone coming in that doesn't have any knowledge of the auction to try to go in there and make a good deal.
Right.
Now, you can go in there and buy something. You're going to probably spend, you know, 90% of value to acquire it. And you're going to lose money on the back end.
Right, because you don't know if what it – because realize when you purchase something at the auction – 9 times out of 10, you haven't been able to go in. 9.9 times out of 10, you haven't been able to go in the property. You don't know what's going on. Also, you're dealing with any, you know, possible title issues or things of that nature. So there's more than just going to the auction, I guess. And we'll have another. I've had a couple people do classes on auction and the title curative process and all that kind of stuff. But it's not for the faint of heart. It's not like, because there's two shows, Craig, on HGTV and I think Bravo. That are auction shows in Arizona and California, and they just make it seem like in those 30 minutes, you know, they're on walkie-talkies and you know, this, that, and the other, and oh, boom, we got it, and we bought it for $2 and we sold it for $3
million. Right.
And it all happens in 30 minutes.
Right.
It don't work like that. That's a TV show.
That's
probably only showing you 5% of all the stuff that goes on before that. The other thing that you taught me over the years about the auction is, and not saying that you guys do this, but some of the veterans in the auction will see newbies and bid stuff up just to keep them away.
The goal of the seasoned auction investor is to keep their market.
Right.
So if someone comes in new and they don't know what's going on, have a good handle on it, then what the goal is to make them spend their money.
Right.
And get them out the way. Yeah. You know, give them. Put a deal, a burn deal. They say, hey, I'm going to drop a burn deal on them.
Right.
Well, there's a house. They don't know that it's burned or not, right?
Right.
So then you go and bid, and they watching you bid, and then you say, okay, you know, let them have it.
Right.
And they got it, and then when they go see it, it's a burn job.
Right.
Man,
bought with is better than talk.
Oh, man. They're done.
Right, they're done.
Don't have to worry about them coming to the auction no more. That's over.
So the auction, point number two about the auction, is Darwinism at its finest. It is survival of the fittest. There's no friends. Am I correct?
That's correct.
There's no friends at the auction. Even friends, there are no friends at the auction. Because I know you walk in the auction, you see people you know all the time, but we're in the auction.
That's right.
It's like walking into the ring.
That's,
you know, two friends can be friends outside the ring, and they walk into the ring, and they got to fight.
It's on. It's
right?
on.
And I want people to be clear on this, that, you know, because it doesn't work the same in regular real estate. Oh, man, you were going to go after the house? I'll let you go after it. Like, I'm making an offer.
Right.
Nah. In the auction, it's Darwinism because it's people from everywhere, walking around. You mentioned cash.
Right.
People don't understand that. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. In Georgia, They have a bond program where you can put 10% down at the auction, and then you have 30 days to close it.
Right.
Right. I have friends that buy in Atlanta.
Right.
In Texas, though.
No. if the property is sold at the auction for $100,000, well, you got to produce $100,000
right
there.
Right.
And most of the time, people have it in cashier's checks.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to the bank, you get cashier's checks, and you bring them up to the auction, and you pay with the cashier's checks.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've been up there before. I've seen guys walking around with muscle, you know, because they bring in millions of dollars.
They got millions of dollars, right. At the auction. And, you know, competition is tough.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get a good deal. You know, if you think it's a good deal, once you get involved in it and then find out that it's been flooded, you know, especially today,
right.
You're walking, you buy a place and, oh, everybody lets you have, oh, I got a great deal. Well, it's been flooded 4 feet. You got to get it all out.
Right.
You
got
to turn around and spend another $100,000 on a $200,000 house that you just bought for $100,000.
Right.
So you're not going to make
any
money.
Take the value out of
it.
So talk about, so there's another market that I've witnessed at the auction is after a property has been purchased, at the auction, sometimes properties are sold again.
That's correct.
Like, you know, in the mingling,
right.
I guess is what you call it.
Well, what happens there is that, again, you know, if you're going to be a competitor at the auction, you need to work with a team.
Right.
Okay. And then there are seasoned people at the auction that's been there buying properties for years.
Mm-hmm.
They know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be four or five teams that know each other, and they bid on this property together.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a property's worth $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they bid together on this property for
$100,000. Mm-hmm.
Then, at the end of the day, they need to one team needs to walk away with that
something.
Property.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go and have an internal bid on who's going to pay the $100,000 plus whatever else over
premium,
the $100,000. To get that property.
Right.
So they may bid it again. So that property may end up going for $120,000.
Right.
So those one person pays $120,000 and those other three teams, they get a share of that.
Share of that. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so again, I'm more so trying to prove the point that auctions are a real place for people. I get a lot of people, Craig, that what I call just retired, 401k looking good.
Right.
They want to roll some money over and they want to go play at the auction.
Right.
And I always tell them that's not the first place
no.
that you want to start playing. It's okay to buy real estate. I recommend that.
Right.
But you want to me, play in a normal market first and get your wings
right.
about you before you run out to the auction. So this is not discouraging about going to the auction. I just want you to be full disclosure. So.
Right. You're going to be at, you know, new. You're at a terrible disadvantage.
Yeah.
And I used to tell my daughter, I said, hey, look, if you're going to fight, make sure you fight on your turf,
right.
you know, with your weapons so you can win.
Right,
don't
right.
go to a fight where you can't win.
Right,
you
right.
know? Don't even
right.
get in it. So going to an auction right now and looking at trying to purchase a great deal, you know, it's your first time out, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
So be prepared for it.
So you mentioned, so you scaled from being by yourself, you've turned those multifamilies into cash so that you could start with your team.
Uh-huh.
And at one point in time, I know you guys have scaled to quite a few
yes.
you know, properties as a group. And so as far as talk about what people have to think about when they go into partnerships, one of the things I always say is that a lot of my, and since I'm African-American, I can say this is all my kinfolk references in my, a lot of times my non-African-American clients will get together in partnerships, scale up, and then they will, you know, decide, well, you know, I want to go do my own thing, but they have all these assets where they can, you know, have a basis of getting out of the partnership and going to do their own thing. A lot of my African-American clients, they won't partner at the beginning.
Right,
they're scared to partner at the beginning, and I just had a conversation on the way here with a group of four Schlumberger guys that took packages.
Okay,
they happen to be Indian, and I've sold them two apartment complexes, and they have gotten together and they're growing. Each one of them individually has come to me and said, "Eventually, I want to do my own thing, but we realize we can do more as a group."
Right,
but I just can't get us to get together.
It's difficult, especially, you know, with us, as a lot of us don't have a lot of trust and a lot of us don't know what we're doing, you know, And so we have to have someone in the group that's seasoned mm-hmm. that can kind of help manage that.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of us have been in corporate America mm-hmm. and we've been under managers, and a lot of the corporate
structure
and stuff like that, you just don't, it doesn't appeal to a lot of blacks.
Right.
So partnering up is really tough.
Right.
You know, because, you know, you've been in corporate America and you want out.
Right.
Because you
do you feel that's the only way to scale though? Initially, or
initially, either that or you're going to have to go to a bank mm-hmm. and get a loan,
right?
And they're not going to risk that kind of money on you
right.
starting off,
right?
So I think for you to really scale up, you're going to have to partner up
right.
and go up that way. Find some people you know and mm-hmm. trust.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other thing I found out you can do is make sure you have someone that can build structure in your partnership.
Hmm.
Put together a strong hmm. partnership.
Mm-hmm.
That way, if one needs to get out, then there's a way to get out.
So you said, I've said this on many podcasts, getting together is not the problem. If your paperwork is right, you have a set of rules. Operating agreement is
right.
what he's talking about. Operating agreement. And that's what I've noticed is that when people partner, and by the way, this is not just a black folk thing. This is an everybody thing. There are trust issues. I've seen issues where people don't want to partner. They want to try to do things on their own. But I always ask them, do you have a partnership agreement? Oh, no, it's just my friends, my good friends, or those are my two guys who went to college together. Hey, awesome. You know, I'm glad y'all know each other and trust each other. You still need to have paperwork.
That's right.
You still got to have paperwork, because what happens if, God forbid, one of y'all passes away? Does the wife take over? Or,
right.
you know, if they have a spouse, or what happens to their shares? Or what if y'all get mad at each other, which, by the way,
it
does happen.
all the time.
What are the rules of right. me getting out of this or whatever? And people say, well, that doesn't stop anybody from saying no or not. No, it doesn't, but it gives you a set of rules to go to the court to decide what those rules are and have somebody interpret it. So I just want to encourage people out there, and this is regardless, not just auction, but just real estate investment. If you want to scale to a wealth standpoint, and I've witnessed this, and I'm starting to do it myself as well, is to me, at least starting off, you have to partner.
Correct.
To me. Now, some people might say, hey, Kevin, Craig, I understand that. I just don't choose to do it. That's fine. And I'm going to go, you know, one property a year for 20 years. Awesome. That's
right.
And there's nothing wrong with that as well. But I just want to make sure that people understand that partnerships allow you to scale a lot faster.
Right. And I think when you do the partnership agreement, you always think of what the end's going to be.
Right.
So you say, hey, at the end of this, we're going to be divided.
Mm-hmm.
So start say, we're going to be divided. So then you work your way back.
How does that look?
How do you get there
right.
from where we are now?
Right.
And once you think about that and go through it, then you'll be fine.
Right.
You know,
right.
everybody's on the same page. If something happens, one person moved. Like I mm-hmm. had a partner and he moved out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am stuck in Houston doing the work, and my partner's in
Atlanta.
Saying,
send me
how do
my
you
check.
Do that?
Okay. right.
Yeah.
All right. So again, in order to scale, and those partnerships, you know, worked at the auction. I mean, y'all
right.
partnered to do the auction, and then I also noticed that one of my life philosophies is that we are only as powerful as our database. And one thing I've noticed from you over the years is, since you've gotten in this investor world, you know, you're like a deal magnet, like not even at the auction stuff.
Right.
People just call Craig now and say, and so I call Craig and he sounds like, you know, the Godfather. Oh, I got this deal.
right.
You know, why don't you go over there, look, pass by this property, tell me what you think.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does he, you know, find out about it? But so what I've noticed is, once you're in that world and you're in that world and you're known in that world as, you know, someone that'll do deals and honorable,
right.
you don't search deals.
No.
I mean, I know you still do a little right. bit, but like they just kind of come to you.
They come to you. You
yeah.
know, it's just like now people call and they say, hey, you know, I got a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, won't you look at it?
Right.
You know, and I go look at it and I say, oh, I like it. And then I close.
Right.
You know, then I'm done.
That's the most important thing, by the way, closing.
Right. closing, that's right. Because if it's a good deal, then I realize if it's a good deal, it's not going to be good for long.
Right.
So
right.
if I want it, I got to close on it.
Right.
So I let them know I got cash, I'm going to close, and I do what I say I'm going to do.
Right.
You know, and if you continue doing that, when people think about, you know, somebody they can sell something to, then
mm-hmm.
they'll come to you.
Right.
You know, the deals will get sweeter and sweeter. So, well, you know I'm going to close.
Right.
Versus spending 30, 60 days on someone that doesn't close.
Right.
You know,
right.
waste your time.
Right.
You know.
Right. And so for those cash investors out there, or just investors in general, whether getting cash or finance, do what you say you're going to do. Because wholesalers and attorneys and, I mean, your deals come from all, I mean, yeah. Everybody.
Right.
Everybody. So from wholesalers to attorneys to other realtors to people you've done deals with before to tenants.
Right.
Yeah, everything, right?
I got tenants that have lived in rental properties of mine, mm-hmm. you know, and then they said, well, you know, my uncle passed or whatever, and they mm-hmm. got this house, and we want to sell it, want to liquidate it. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go look at it.
Right.
And then I'll close the deal.
Right.
And I'm done. Okay. And then you got tenants that are want to go buy a house. They mm-hmm. say, Mr. Craig, I'm looking at buying a house. I say, okay, I got one over here I can sell to you.
Right.
Boom.
Right.
Done.
Keep the money in the family. So if you were – so this is a different time now.
Right.
Right. I haven't talked to you in a while. And so I just wonder what your advice would be to someone that's starting out today versus when I started 20 years ago.
Right.
Is it the same? Has it changed a little bit? What would your advice be now?
As someone starting off as a new investor.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would say, first of all, if you're going to get into real estate, it's a great investment vehicle. Mm-hmm. So I love it. You know, it's going to appreciate. I tell people, I say, look, if I had an opportunity to buy one house in 30 years, I buy that house for $50,000, and in 30 years that house is worth $500,000, mm-hmm. you know, then shoot, what if I bought 30 of them?
Right, right, right.
You know, so that number just goes way out the box. But get into real estate. I think it's great. Be careful. Right now it's the environment that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. One, you got flood damaged houses that mm-hmm. you got to deal with. The secondly is that there's a lot of people out there mm-hmm. and they're investing in real estate.
They're driving the prices way up.
Houston's going to appreciate a lot mm-hmm. within the next 10 years or so. It's mm-hmm. just going to continue to appreciate. A lot of people moving into
correct.
It. So if you find a deal, If you don't know how to manage, get you a good realtor, mm-hmm. right? And get you a good realtor, one you can trust, and close it at a title company. You know, closing at a title company, your first couple of deals kind of gets you in the mindset of how it's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would lean to say, always close your deals if you can't at a title company.
Absolutely.
Right, because don't go out there. They got a lot of people out there who will take your money.
Right.
So
right. I've seen that as well.
Make sure you have liquidity. Mm-hmm. Sure you have cash. Get you a good realtor. Find you some good deals. Mm-hmm. And then you have to build yourself a crew of people you can go to. Attorneys, electricians, mm-hmm. all your trades. Get all your trades lined up. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go into a deal and your first interaction with a trade is that it's
after
on that
close.
Deal.
Yeah, right. After you close, right.
Right. You already want to have, you know, some people that you've done little work with. So get you one house. Like I got a cousin of mine. He just mm-hmm. bought a house. Mm-hmm. He says, Craig, and he's one that had the 401k. Mm-hmm. When he wants mm-hmm. to. And he said, Craig, I want to buy a whole bunch. I said, no. You buy one house, you go through the whole process.
That's your undergrad degree right there, that one house.
You go through the whole process of renovating it, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'll take you to another one.
Right.
I'm not going to get you knee deep in about four or five houses and then you're going to sink.
Right.
And then you're going to look at me. No, I ain't got time for that.
Right.
What I want you to do, I want you to learn from this first project.
Yeah.
So get you one, learn from it. If it's a rental or if it's a rehab, a flip, do one, then go to the another. Once you're successful on that one, go to the next one. Don't do a two or three of them at one time, one at a time.
Right. And so from a, as we come to an end here, I just want people, as much as you feel comfortable, to understand your portfolio. I'm talking to someone that owns, can I say, more than 40 properties? Is that is that fair? And so the reason I want to kind of say that is because for the first 2 weeks we talked to some folks that are kind of at the beginning where you were 25 plus years ago, and so his advice is sage. So you know, again, as we come to an end, what has real estate allow you to do outside of real estate? I want to end with that.
Okay.
So we talking about real estate. You got your portfolio. You are where most people want to get to, right? That are investors that I run into. What has, over the years and even now, what has that allowed for you to do outside of real estate with your family or personally or whatever the case may be?
I mean, I think it really has blessed me in a number of different ways. One is that I don't punch a clock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he doesn't work, though.
Right, right. No, I work hard.
Right, okay. Right.
I work hard. I don't punch a clock. I've traveled all over the world. You know, I've been able to send my kids to private school, mm-hmm. you know, so, and me and my wife, we're just free, mm-hmm. you know, and we do what we want to do when we want to do it. But again, I work very hard. Mm-hmm. I work, you know, Monday through Sunday mm-hmm. doing stuff. Just depends on what I need to do. Mm-hmm. But real estate in my life, it has made my life a lot easier. I make a lot more money than I ever made. Mm-hmm. I used to tell people I pay more taxes mm-hmm. than I made at my job in corporate America.
Right.
Right.
So I can also remember calling Craig around, I think it was November, this is a while back, November or December. I said, man, what you doing? Man, I'm over here writing these real estate tax, because right. he has to pay taxes all else. And he just wasn't in the greatest. I mean, you were thankful to have the properties, but right. you know, cutting that money wasn't never fun.
Right.
But my point is, what I want people to, you know, there's a group here called Lifestyles, as you know, Lifestyles uh-huh. Unlimited. And I've had clients use them before, but the reason I bring that up is their slogan is not about, it's about the lifestyle. In other words, right. Investing in real estate is a means to an end.
Right.
And it allows for you to have flexibility and schedule. It does not mean that you don't work.
Right.
Flexibility and schedule, it is funded. One of the things that you taught me when I had that fourplex in Galveston, I had coin operated. Washing and dryer. Washing and dryer. And Craig and I think in Ben's, right. you used to take either take the money or you'd have the kids come with you
right.
to get the quarters out of the thing. And that was kind of showing. So I used to do the same thing with Madison.
Right.
And she would, you know, she was probably 5 or 6 years old, 7 years old. And she just, that was like the biggest thing ever. But I learned that, you know, you try to get them and how you can change the whole mindset. And so Madison is so business minded now.
Right.
Like everything is about making money. She was mad. I got a referral deal recently, a large deal, mm-hmm. And I got it referred from a residential agent. And so it closed, and I was telling them that it closed. And so Madison was on a calculator calculating my commission, of course.
Right.
And I was just like, you made this? I said, no, I didn't make that. I had to give 30% of it to the agent. And then she's like, you had to get that much to right. To the agent? I was like, yeah, I wouldn't have had the deal. And so I say all that to say that, just over the years, you'd be surprised how that they pick up on
right.
that mentality and all the things that you've taught me. I appreciate because I've passed it on to my daughter. So again, I want to say that. So any last thoughts, Craig, as far as, you know, real estate or where you see the market going? You know, is there the next biggest thing? Because people are always trying to sell people on the next biggest right. real estate investment right. thing. You know,
well, I think that, you know, like for me, and I try to keep it simple, like Third Ward, mm-hmm. you know, is my base. And when I sell, like in the museum, when I sell properties on the museum side, mm-hmm. I moved over to the east side of 288, mm-hmm. you know, and Eastwood. Invest my money there. Mm-hmm. And it keeps on going, appreciating. Mm-hmm. And then when that's done, then I move over to south of OST,
mm-hmm.
you know, and keep going that way. Mm-hmm. And then the South Park. So
you try to get ahead of the
curve.
Growth. Right.
That way you can get the full appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sell on one side, mm-hmm. then you just move it over to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know where your good base is,
mm-hmm.
then you say, well, what's another area that's close by,
mm-hmm.
but that's kind of so-so,
right.
kind of iffy.
I can still get some deals, basically.
Right, still get some deals at a right. good price, you
right.
know,
right.
and you know that market's going to change.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time. So if you have holding power,
mm-hmm.
which is very important,
yeah.
if you mm-hmm. have holding power, it's going to come.
Right.
You know, you can make a bad buy,
mm-hmm.
but if you can hold,
you can save, yeah, exactly.
It's going to
yeah,
be better.
Time value of money, right?
Right,
exactly.
Right. So,
exactly. Any suburban market, real quick, any suburban markets? Because I know you're infield dirt, you know.
Yeah. I don't even look out.
For those that are listening to this, right. if you look on camera, his head started shaking before he even yeah. answered the question.
Yeah, I don't do suburban. You know, I stay right here. In the inner city.
In the inner city.
Right, because there's enough money, and I've talked with some investors about, well, Craig, I have a whole bunch of properties I can sell to you in Katy, because mm-hmm. there's great deals.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's enough deals in Third Ward and South Park, I can make my money without driving all the way to Katy, because I don't want to spend the time
right.
driving way over there.
Right.
If I can't make it here, I don't right. need to make it.
So the last lesson from Craig Cassell is discipline. You noticed I tried to get him outside of his rules, just by that question, and he started shaking his head before I could even get it. So, man, I want to thank you for coming in. He's a hard guy to catch up with, and also I want to acknowledge that he operates in the shadows. He always very incognito. And so for him to be on this podcast and in front of a camera and putting this on wax is a big deal. So I want to acknowledge and I appreciate that. Well, but I think you're helping some people. So
Well, Kevin, I've only did it for you because anybody else, no. Staying underneath the radar is a good thing.
It's a good. So Look, he ends with a lesson. Staying underneath the don't. When you start doing this cash flow, don't go out and buy big cars and all that kind of stuff. Just stay chill. That's why you still get those deals. Look, this is Kevin Riles with the Real Estate of Life and friends. And so I just want to thank Craig Cassell again for coming here to talking. I hope you got something out of this. And we will be ending Investor April next week. And so I hope you are enjoying these. I hope they're giving you something. As always, you can reach me at Kevin Riles. You can Google me at Kevin Riles. Kevin Riles on Facebook. Kevin Riles on Instagram. Kevin Riles on Snapchat. Kevin Riles, just R-I-L-E-S. Again, thank you. If you have a question, feel free to email me at kevin@kevinriles.com or you can call me in my office, 281-403-3700. Again, 281-403-3700. I will see you next week.